Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven on WNHH-FM. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make our community tick. Today we have someone who's starting to make New Haven tick in a big way. Charmaine Yoon is the new executive director of Christian Community Action, CCA. It's one of the state's leading anti-poverty agencies. It's based right here in New Haven. And Charmaine is bringing into a new era after 35 years of prior leadership. Thanks for coming on Dateline New Haven and making time, fighting one of the most persistent ills in our society and doing a very good job at it, in my opinion. So, Charmaine, you've been at it 9 days, right, officially.
Right.
Although you've been at the AG quite a while, 2021.
Right.
And you're succeeding Reverend Benita Grubbs, who's beloved leader of that organization. So how are the first 9 days going?
I'm grateful for the support we're getting from the community and the staff. We're just continuing to do the work, but definitely it's an adjustment.
Well, the work includes getting people food, getting people housing off housing,
right.
Giving people skills, helping them train so they could take care
and then
of themselves.
Advocacy is another
for changes part of it. In law, exactly. So there are enough that people can live on.
Right.
I was reading about that the other day. They say that why is it that 2-on-1 centers are getting so many calls from people who don't qualify for public aid?
Right.
But they can't make ends meet. And they said one reason they argued was actually an advocacy question, that they haven't upped the
minimum wage.
Haven't upped what it means to be poor under federal guidelines. So you don't qualify for programs, even though the cost of living gone up so high.
Right. One of our big things that we've been talking about is the benefits cliff. I don't know.
That's what they're talking about. You don't qualify for benefits.
Correct. You don't qualify for it.
They interview people who are working, sometimes two jobs. They have two kids, and there's just no way they can pay the rent and get the food.
Exactly.
Tell me about the benefits cliff. What kind of work are you doing on that?
The benefits cliff is, you know, this idea that individuals and families are, you know, receiving benefits like SNAP or, you know, Medicaid or something, but because they have an increase in their income, then the benefits get dropped, but it's not proportional to being able to.
Like you make another $1,000 a year and you lose $3,000 in benefits.
Right. So the numbers just don't line up so that people can be stable. And so.
So an argument often to people who are skeptical of government aid is that you want to make work pay, right? Is that one of the arguments you make to people who are less likely to vote for benefit increases?
Right. But we need to do it in a way that's, you know, that ensures people can be stable, you know, before you take something away or, you know, just give a little more time, a little more grace, you know, in order to be able to.
Is any of that happening at the state legislature this session?
Yeah, I think our group, Mothers and Others for Justice and our Advocacy and Education Project, they're really trying to get support to make it, a bill to address some of these issues
for this year. For
the next year.
Anyone,
it's in the works.
Anyone in your corner? Any legislators?
I have it written down somewhere, but we'll.
But I'm guessing the New Haven
legislators.
Definitely
Senator Martin Looney. Definitely.
And so what have been the reactions for people if you've taken over these first 9 days? What have the days been like?
A lot of support, a lot of big shoes to fill. I've been getting that a lot. I've been so grateful. I keep getting things in the mail that get to me right when I need it. Even yesterday, I was fighting another fire, and I got something in the mail.
Email.
A card.
People still send you cards in the mail?
Yeah. And
wow.
It's a really a sweet supporter. And she wrote, you know, she has this thing that says, remember to breathe.
Yeah.
And I needed it at just the right time. You know, you can't stop the waves, but you can learn to surf. But so just things like that where I just,
you know,
write when I need it.
I often try to remind myself that I'm not stopping to breathe. So you're feeling a little overwhelmed because of the big shoes to fill, all the work to do fighting poverty.
There's a lot to do, but you know, a day at a time.
Mm-hmm. You know what? You've already been there since 2021. I will go a little later into your whole history, but one thing I was looking at what you did, and even though I've written about Christian Community Action since the 80s, I didn't realize that they had some doing what you did at first.
The landlord engagement.
Landlord engagement specialist. Is that a nice way of saying kicking the butts of slumlords or no?
No, not necessarily. It's actually working together with landlords
to do what?
Just to house our, you know, the families that we serve, the people that we serve. So
that's interesting.
Yeah, working together. And I think that was an interesting angle, right? It's saying work together with us, you know, and here are ways we can help and advocate for our clients and to say, how can we make it easier for you? How can we help you?
So is that partly people some landlords don't want to house people who are in Section 8, for instance, take Section 8 vouchers, right?
No, some people, and part of it is, you know, us assisting them to educate and to let them know what it's about and what's entailed, you know, making the job a little easier for them.
Because they have to do a lot of paperwork.
It's a lot. And so that job really opened my eyes to, you know, it's funny, we live in a world where there's, you know, X is bad guy and Y is good guy, you know, and and I think we live in a world where there are, you know, there are, it's a lot more gray than that. And so there are landlords out there that really want to help, you know, and so we really appreciate that and want to work together with them.
So tell me a story about someone you were able to get into an apartment.
Oh, gosh. I mean, it could be things like, a lot of times it's advocating for them. So, you know, if they have something in their history that, you know, on paper, a landlord might not, you know, want right away, but we can explain some of it. You know, this happened because they lost this. This was happening in their lives. So a lot of it is just advocating.
And it's partly, is it the Section 8 question?
No, not necessarily. Credit is always a big issue.
Credit is a big issue.
Or even, you know, filling out applications, you know, helping clients fill out applications. You know, every application, you know, you have to pay for it. So most applications. And so even to be able to try to, you know, help our clients, you know, do that. There's just a lot of work.
Do you pay for the applications?
We do.
How much does it cost to apply? I haven't done this in years.
I mean, there are some applications take about $50 maybe.
Whoa, and then you
whether
or
not
down.
You get the whether or not you get the apartment.
Wow, yeah. So it's hardest for the people who can't afford it.
Exactly, and
that sucks.
Yeah, so even, you know, thinking about things like that, I think there are just some things in our system that I would love to see addressed, or, you know.
Would you like to see no fees for applying?
I mean, I don't know. I'd have a bigger conversation about that, but yeah, it'd be too good to think through.
I loved
that.
What you said about gray areas.
Yeah.
Like not all landlords are slumlords.
Not at all. Yeah.
And not all people who are public assistants are not most people.
Correct. Exactly. Exactly. All those stereotypes that we have. And that's probably true of many realms, right?
Well, I've had this conversation with landlords. It's interesting. So they say, I was talking once to a slumlord. And like people say, you know, I live in your building. You have all these tenants who are Section 8 tenants. They'll bring up Section 8, which isn't fair, right?
Right.
But you have these problem tenants
right.
who make life miserable for everybody. It only takes two or three. I remember knocking on a door and was doing prostitution in one door, the drugs in the other, right? So he said to me, I was a hypocrite, because he said, he had a good point. He said, you know, what about those other landlords who just won't rent to those people? Where are those people supposed to go? So they say, and it gets, as you say, it's great. It doesn't mean where people who are poor or Section 8 go. Where should people who have problematic histories or cause
right.
problems?
Right.
And there was a dynamic, and you're right, it's not all one-way gray,
right.
where landlords willing to take Section 8 money, which is good rent, and they don't necessarily put it back into upkeep so they can make a good, there's a whole business model of that that's bringing tens of millions of dollars a year into the city from people who are investing in certain landlord groups who don't keep up their properties. And they say, we're doing a nice thing housing people on Section 8, but they'll take problem tenants and take that money. How do we work our way through that? Like, how do you get landlords who are good landlords to deal with the question of you have your responsibility to other tenants not to have someone who's going to wreck the place?
Right. And that's where, and this is why we might talk about this later, but holistic, you know, like working with our clients to say, you know, how can we be better tenants? How can we be taking care of things? And, you know, it's more holistic than just placing somebody into housing, you know, and if we had more, hopefully, you know, homeless services can, you know, be increased our funds to even be able to do that back work of how do we help people be better tenants? You know,
I'm also thinking how you make landlords better landlords.
Yeah, that's a whole.
And that's not really your job, right? Your job, that's the job of code enforcers and tenant unions.
Yeah, which
right?
we appreciate them as well. They're partners and we love them.
But it's so
too.
Interesting. You're dealing with a very important challenge, which is people come to you because they've been homeless.
Right, right.
And you're helping them do all the work that gets them self-sufficient.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they're doing the work. It's funny, Benito is very intentional about this, but our case managers are called, they're not called case managers, they're called family coaches, but it's really the sense of, you know, we're just kind of on the side helping people to reach their goals. You know, what is it that they want to reach? And we want to just come alongside and help people take that next step.
Right. Because there's a danger with social work or advocacy sometimes where you're the person, the helper, is really setting an agenda, right?
Right, exactly. And so family coaches just come alongside. So that really is kind of the person-centered part of what we do.
And we're talking to Charmaine Yoon, who's the new executive director of Christian Community Action, one of the great nonprofits in New Haven, helping people get on their feet when they've hit some low points in their lives. Tell me, where did you grow up, Charmaine?
I grew up in Los Angeles.
Los Angeles.
Yeah.
And you came to New Haven in 91?
91, yep.
To go to Yale, yeah. Had you grown up knowing you wanted to do this kind of work?
No, not at all. I got my foray into learning about New Haven. I was a tutor at Prince Elementary. Do you remember Prince? I was a tutor there and fell in love with the kids.
And CCA was involved in building a new school.
I didn't even know. Yeah,
and they tore down.
But so I got my foray into New Haven then. And then, I don't know if you want the whole story, but I got my foray into New Haven and had to be intentional to make sure I was.
What was it like? That was a dark building, Prince.
Prince?
That was an old building, kind of big hallways.
Right now, it's a doctor's office. It's a doctor's office. Is it?
Well, the block has the doctor's offices, and they converted the schools.
Something
there were two
like
schools,
that.
Welsh School and Prince, which is now Daniel School. They rebuilt down the street with Christianity. He was involved in houses they were tearing down for that. But they've made those into apartments and offices.
Right. I don't even remember anymore.
Well, what was it like when you were in there? Did you feel like they should be moving kids to a different place?
No. I just remember really loving the kids. So that's when I fell in love with kids in New Haven. And then after that, I actually, senior year actually is when it was all really pivotal for me. But senior year.
What were you thinking before that you might do with your life?
Probably, I was thinking law school, probably. Maybe public interest law. That was something that was on my mind. But I was reading actually my scriptures one night in Isaiah 58, and in the scriptures, it talks about fasting and how fasting is not just one night. Well, I mean, it's not just one day of bowing your head, you know, and being in sackcloth and ashes, but it really, at this point, it says true fasting is, I actually wrote it down, you know, true fasting is loosening the chains of injustice and untying the cords of the yoke. To set the oppressed free and to break every yoke. And then it goes on to say, is it not to share your food with the hungry and to provide the poor wanderer with shelter?
Now, why is that true fasting? Tell me about that. What does that mean?
It's God's heart for those in need. You know, it just really shows what God wants us to be doing.
But what does it mean by the word fasting? Because fasting literally means not eating, right?
It means not eating. I suppose here there is the sense of if we're to do this work, there is something that we're, you know, giving up or sacrificing.
So the idea of doing a ritual sacrifice in the name of spirituality or religion.
Correct.
You're saying isn't just the act of denying yourself something.
Right.
It's about doing that in the context of playing a different role in the world.
Exactly. And so that
fasting
really
is deep. You know, all the traditions have it.
Right. Exactly.
You know, I always think of Ramadan, we're just finishing now, where they go the 30 days and it's sun up to sun down.
Right.
So this time of year, summer is brutal. You know, in our tradition, Jewish, you don't drink either for those 25 hours.
Right.
But I remember I was telling you before in the air, the person who had your job before Benita Groves went on a long fast, a juice
Carl Hilger, right?
Yeah, for more aid for poor people.
Right. So there is that sacrifice. And
so you're reading the scriptures that night.
So I'm reading the scriptures.
And did you think of it as fasting, or did you think the act of being a Christian?
It was more just God's heart. I saw God's heart for those in need. And it was at the time I was moved to go. At that time, around the Yale area, there were actually a lot more people who were experiencing homelessness around the campus. I feel like I don't see it as much these days, but back in the 90s, you know, you saw it on the walkways and things like that. And so I just went out and got to know people who were, you know, experiencing homelessness, and I took out some sandwiches from the dining hall, and I don't know if I was allowed to do that, but I went out, and that was the real start of really learning people's stories and how they got there. And and then I actually ended up turning that into a senior essay.
Right. Homeless in New Haven, the need for coordinated service.
And quite honestly, it wasn't a great paper, but it definitely sparked.
What was the subject? I mean, what was the academic discipline? Was it history?
Sociology.
Sociology. Okay. Yeah. And how did you go about making that an academic work?
I mean, I had all these stories that, you know, these qualitative stories that I turned into some more research.
Did you turn to quantitative?
No, I mean, I put a little quantitative, but back then I just wasn't
even
sure what I was
doing. That was the hard part. I remember how you made like politics or issues of people's lives quantitative. Yeah.
Right.
But is that something that made a pivot for you in your life goals? Did you say, okay, now I'm going to go somewhere else?
See, even then it was that my heart was quickened and I really started being concerned about, especially about people in New Haven. But even then, career-wise, professionally, I actually made a detour after I graduated. My husband and I ended up doing campus ministry, actually.
Not a detour.
Well, yeah, that's not a detour, but it was working with Yale students.
So had you always been religious? Did you grow up religious?
Actually, no. I grew up kind of irreligious, but my parents sent us to church at some point when I was young, and it was there that I...
But when you came to college, were you a religious
person? So by the
person?
Time I came, yeah, I was.
So that was important to you. Was it a Protestant, certain denomination?
Yeah, I called it interdenominational, but yeah, Protestant.
So you already, this was an important part of life, was religious faith? Evangelical part. Or no?
I mean, I wouldn't put that stamp on it, but I'll just say.
But it guided how you thought about what you were going to do.
It definitely was a part of what I thought and what I did and my practices and my values.
So would you pray every day?
Yeah, yeah.
And did you fast?
Yeah, at some point. Yeah.
I find fasting meaningful.
Yeah, it is. It kind of grounds you.
I don't do every fast day, but a few days a year. Yeah. And I find it's very meaningful.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it kind of stops you from your routine of like,
right.
You're just grabbing food without even thinking about it sometimes, you know?
Exactly. We go through routines.
And you expect to get this constant sustenance and routine. You're like, yeah.
Yeah.
It helps you center on things that might be more important. Right. So you became a campus minister where?
At Yale. Okay. So we worked with Yale students, but we made sure we involved the Yale students in the opportunities and the work of the city.
But what was your job? What was it called?
I mean, we just called it campus minister. We were on staff in this group with students. It was probably a group of about 50 to 60 students at Yale.
And you would just have organized activities?
Yeah, organized activities. And again, trying to get them, one of my goals was to get them into the city for the opportunities and some of the needs that are there.
So you did that for quite a while, right?
We did that for quite a while, but again, all the while making sure we were living in the city. We decided to live on kind of the part of town that had a little more needs. We raised our kids in the public schools, and then I had this moment. I hope it's okay to go into it, but I had this
moment
actually 15 years ago. 15 years ago, I was like thinking, should I think about law school again, or should I venture into something else? And it was at that time that I heard something in my heart that was like, the phrase was, do what's in front of you. And at the time, what was in front of me were these kids who were hanging out on my stoop. And they were kids that we would sometimes have over for dinner or that we would take to go do activities.
How old?
They ranged probably from 10 to 15, you know, or 8 to 15. And at that time, they were the ones in front of me. And so I decided, you know what, I'm just going to turn this into a mentoring program. And so we had students from our, we had students from our ministry work with these kids at the time, and that was just really
what
fun.
Kind of work?
Just tutoring and mentoring, enriching, you know, taking them to.
And did Yale still have that? Because I remember a friend of mine who was involved with church stuff at Yale when I was an undergraduate there used to go tutor in Elm Haven. There was a very formal tutoring project for students. Was that still there, or were you kind of filling a gap there?
Filling a gap with the kids in my neighborhood. Yeah, we were operating out of my house and things like that, and. So that was then. I actually got this text in December from one of those kids, and it was him in one of the kids in my neighborhood, and it's him in a cap and gown, and he said graduated college today, and he's still in touch with his mentor.
Way to go!
Yeah, that was really fun. But so that
you're bringing
turned,
town and gown together.
Yeah, yeah, and that's been a real goal of mine over the years, and after that, the next big thing was working with a collaboration of churches, actually 8 to 9 churches, to start a mentoring program. In the housing, we partnered with the Housing Authority in New Haven.
When was this?
This was 2015.
And what kind of program was it?
So we just started a tutoring mentoring program, kind of similarly, you know, have mentors and tutors from these 8 or 9 churches, and we would meet twice a week in these developments that the New Haven Housing Authority.
Oh, had. Which developments?
We were at St. Anthony 1 and 2 is off Quinnipiac Avenue. So we were there for quite a long time.
So at a church?
No, we actually operated out of a school.
Okay.
Yeah. So we had, you know, basketball. We had basketball nets and all those things.
So a mini leap kind of.
Sort of. Yeah. Yeah. And these were really committed volunteers.
So were they Yale student volunteers?
No. At this point, it wasn't anymore. Yeah.
So you branched it out.
Yeah. We branched it out.
And how many churches were involved?
8 to 9. Yeah.
Wow. So you were the driving force on this. You were an organizer.
I guess so. So that was really my exposure to, okay, what are, you know, some of the challenges that low-income families face and things like that. So that was kind of really eye-opening.
And then you went there for social work and master's in social work in UConn. And why did you do that?
I think it was just kind of the next obvious, you know, the next thing that I really needed. I wanted some space and time to really think about these things I was seeing and to kind of delve in it.
How many years was that?
It was 2 years. It was so during the pandemic.
You got a little break from doing work that can really add up to be a lot sometimes, right?
Yeah.
When you can't change the fundamental conditions in society and you're trying to help people succeed within the limits of that, right?
Yeah.
So you came back and then you went to 2021, you went to CCA.
CCA, yeah.
And then you worked your way up division, the landlord engagement specialist and then director of administration and planning. What did that mean? Like a lieutenant for Bonita?
I think at the time Bonita, you know, she expressed a need for help. And so I just came alongside. And Bonita was someone I met in 2014 when we were starting this, long story. Anyway, 2014, I had met her. And I remember I found this actually in my diary much later. I said, I met Reverend Bonita Grubbs today. I want to be mentored by her. I actually wrote that down, yeah, in 2014. And I had kind of forgotten about it.
And that's when you were organizing the citywide citywide public housing.
Yeah, entry. So we were starting that, and I wanted to meet her. And anyway, so I wrote that in my diary, and lo and behold, years later, she had said,
you know, she mentor you at the time, or?
I was working at CCA, and so, you know, we had a conversation, and she said she needed help, and so she
I mean back in 2014 when you wrote down you wanted her to be your mentor.
Right, I was like, oh, I want to be mentored by her, but nothing came of it at that time. But it's just funny that I had written
7 years
at
later.
Some point in my life.
What kind of mentor was she?
I mean, she, just watching her, you know, in action, watching her speak with such eloquence and heart and, you know, vision. She's such a visionary, you know. I just see some of the things, and you've seen it, you know, some of the things that she's
Well, things struck me about her that made her different to me was the way that a lot of people do the kind of work we're talking about, they do service.
Yes.
So you get food to people, you get housing. It's really important.
Right.
Then other people do advocacy,
right,
looking at what is unfair
also
society to change,
right,
it. And she brought those two together,
yes,
and how they fit together.
Yeah.
And also she is so respected because she has so little ego in her work. She never puts herself out as a political player looking for attention,
right?
Right. She doesn't act like she knows better than other people, even though she does. And so I always found she was one of those people in town on very difficult issues that nobody ever questioned her integrity.
Mm-hmm.
So if she said something or people she worked with said something, people listened in power. Because she wasn't compromised, she wasn't bought, and she wasn't advancing herself. She really was so true to the mission. She's quite a special person.
Right. Yeah, we miss her.
You know, but now you got Charmaine Yoon, who's the new executive director of Christian Community Action, and we're talking to her on Dateline New Haven on WNHH-FM 103.5 and live streamed at WNHH.org. So what is that like when you succeed someone who has built such a reputation over a decade? That's a challenge. Like, I'm talking about churches and synagogues, I'm talking about schools, I'm talking about private companies. When someone's leading something for a long time, the culture sort of reflects them. People get used to how it runs that way, they get used to that person, they run it. And even when they're there, they have to change things. And then when they leave, things have to change sometimes. How have you approached that challenge of taking over someone who was so identified with it for so long?
So I'm 9 days in, Paul.
But you must have thought about, how am I going to do that?
Yeah. And I want to keep all the things that make us distinct. You know, I want to keep the person-centeredness, you know. I want to keep, you know, some of the faith, putting faith into action type of things.
Mm-hmm.
But also to say, you know, I'm open to, you know, what are the new things that we want to advance to? You know, what are the... you know, what opportunities are there?
And
ahead?
She always did new things. And partly because the funding changed. Like, you have this transitions place in Winchester, 660 Winchester, where the money dried up for people who had no place to live. You get them living there for a while with support. It's not a shelter, really.
Right.
You know, they have an apartment and you're helping them get job training. Then she had to redefine what that was for what money was there and partnered with the housing authority.
Right. So, and that's probably just part and parcel of nonprofit work.
You're scrambling for those nickels under the couch pillows.
Right.
So what's some of the ways you get, what are some of the new challenges you're going to take on and directions you're going to take it?
I was ready for this question, but I do want to say, you know, I want to continue the work, of course, of emergency needs and providing food and, you know, we have the diaper bank and things like that. I want our shelter program, you know, we serve 17 families on the hillside.
Davenport Ave.
On the Davenport Ave, right. And, you know, but there are, right now, I think the numbers, you know, there are 25 people on the stabilization list waiting for shelter. So I do wonder, we could do, you know, even more on that side. In advocacy, you know, I think I told you, you know, the benefits cliff is kind of our next thing, as well as, of course, affordable housing. you know, we were part of helping to start the coalition Room for All, and that's a group that is really dedicated to affordable housing. But then one of our next big things would be the Arise Center. I don't know if you know.
That's in Winchester, also, right?
It's actually on Davenport.
That you give skills to people?
Right. So right now we operate out of a church basement. And Arise, Benita, something about Benita, she loves acronyms. So Arise, of course, stands for Accessing Resources for Independence, Skill Building, and Employment. And so we have an employment specialist, an Arise director, and a child and family specialist. And so that, you know, is... we would love to see that expand, you know, to provide not just for CCA families, but, you know, in the community as well. The old building needs revamping. You know, we're just out of a basement
right
now.
Made at 168 Davenport.
Yeah, 168. So if you can imagine, you know, a space that has, you know, meeting space for people in the Hill, you know, office space, or move our food pantry and diaper bank over, or move our advocacy over with a broadcast room like this, mm-hmm. or, you know, a kitchen with, you know, healthy cooking classes, you know, just things to, you know, it's the surrounding. We're thinking, you know, what are other services can we bring in? You know, an in-house therapist or legal services, or even, you know, an after-school program. Can we bring something like that in? But I don't know if I should say it here, but I would love, we're doing financial literacy classes right now, but I would love to expand that. And just even the tagline, I'm wondering one day if Arise Center, if we can have a tagline that says from homelessness to home ownership. Mm-hmm. That would just be such an amazing service and I know that doesn't happen in overnight. I know it takes decades, but we've seen people on that path, and how can we help a person coming in wherever they are to take that next step? You know, and I purposely say home ownership because I think that's something that's been, you know, categorically, you know, denied to people, especially African Americans. And I want to put that back on and say, no, this is accessible, you know, to people.
Why did I think the Arise Center was on the other part of town? Had it moved? Was it always on Davenport?
Yeah, it operates out of a church, that Resurrection Lutheran Church.
The same church where it's next door to your headquarters.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So it's right there. It's right next to us.
Okay. Yeah. So you're talking about continuing programs with the advocacy, the emergency help, expanding them, and then maybe adding, if you can upgrade your building to have...
More services holistically to serve families. And then, of course, you know, affordable housing is something we care about. And that's, I do wonder if that...
What kind of work is there that you're not doing with affordable housing that you could see branching out to?
I'm not sure yet. I mean, right now we just have the Hillside Family Shelter, and then we've got the Moving to Work program. Mm-hmm. So we have that, but in terms of building affordable housing, you know, being a part of that in New Haven, I do wonder, you know, what is our involvement there?
And so tell me about a day when you said, this is why I do the work. If something happened, you said, you know, it's hard, a lot of obstacles to achievement.
I had one of those days last week where I went to some colleagues and I went to visit Concord, whom we love, and you know, they were showing us around, and I actually saw a kid there who was at the cafe, and he was hospitable, he was mature, he was wonderful, and I got his name, and I realized he was actually somebody I had placed as a landlord engagement specialist with his family into a home, and he was in high school at the time, but you know, when I met him last week, he had finished high school, he's pursuing music, and now he's working at this cafe at Concord. And just after that, you know, I went to our New Hope program and saw one of the moms, you know, picking up her twins who she had just finished her GED class. And then I went over to the computer lab and, saw one of our, one of the dads actually finish his security. He passed his security guard test, and just this wonderful moments of seeing people take that next step is just really great.
So the kind of work you do when someone succeeds on their own, that's when you've done your job.
Beautiful.
That's beautiful. If you were to talk to someone who's like Charmaine now in college, discovering what's happening on the walkway between their such colleges, what advice would you give them about how to pursue the work and make a difference?
I guess do what's in front of you. I would just go back to that. Do what's in front of you.
And had you heard that saying from someone? Or
no, it just kind of came to me in the moment when I was really thinking about next steps and what to do.
That's a good saying. Do what's in front of you. And it was the kids on the stoop.
Yeah.
Well, Charmaine, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
It was really a pleasure to chat
with you.
Thank
you so much.
I wish you luck. I think they made a great choice in having you take Christian Community Action to the next generation.
Thank you.
And it's so great that it's still around.
Yes, thank you.
That's definitely one of the enduring agencies. Yeah. And until we get poverty solved.
Yes, please. Yes. Wonderful. Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
I'm going to thank Harry Droz, the station manager. We're going to take it out with the Afro-Semitic Experience, performing I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free from the group CD A Plea for Peace. This is Paul Bass inviting you to fly free with us all day and all night long at WNHH, New Haven's home for community radio.